could you identify yourself, please?
This is Bob Mould, and I am here at KUSF 90.3 FM.
Oh, God, and he's going to be Tuesday. He's going to be in it. It's Tuesday, and it's San Francisco.
And it's San Francisco.
You want to do the weather report?
I have a 5 p.m. From Oakland to LAX.
You could do the weather report
if you'd
like. I could
do the weather. I used to DJ, so I could do that.
I know. Well, you still do to a certain extent, but we'll get
Club
there.
Club DJ.
That would be question number 42B.
Okay, all right.
So what made you decide to come back to the full band? Because the fact is that track that I first mentioned, you know, and the new album have a lot in common, I think, in terms of the sound.
Yeah, I think with Body of Song, you know, this was a record that's been sort of years in the making. The last time I was around talking to people was 2002, and the record that was leading the pack was Modulate, which was a more electronic rock kind of record. The Body of Song was meant to be a companion piece. I wasn't happy with the way the writing was going, and took a year off from it, and in 04 sort of revisited writing with the electric guitar and sort of mashing that up a little bit with the electronic stuff I was working on, and it's an interesting thing, you know. It's you know, the guitar is a good thing to write on. I'm good at it, I guess.
And we're gonna go a little well. Yeah, you have a little bit of a reputation.
Yeah, for a little bit.
Just a little bit. You're doing a gazillion things on this promo tour. I mean, you've done a lot of these. I kind of wear it on your site, and you're like, okay, I'm going to WZQB, probably all that. Anything I can do to make this interview special before we launch into the real questions? Any special things you'd like? You know,
no.
Whipped cream on top of cherry on top of chocolate on
whatever,
top?
Whatever you like.
Don't be so cooperative.
You'll see.
Yeah, I was going to say, as we get it. So Body of Song really is quite a journey, and I'm not going to ask you, is there anything you set out to do here? I love, actually, Entertainment Weekly examining a doomed relationship from every angle. Don't you love when people, you know, in the old days, nobody listened to Tommy and said, well, the blind boy was actually gay, but he actually was not really blind. He had attention deficit disorder.
Didn't want to look.
He just didn't want. Yeah,
yeah, it's a good start to finish album, I think. It's a strong piece of work. Yeah, it's when people want to pick things apart, you know, that's good. I mean, that's, you know, I guess that's what some people get paid to do that night.
Can you tell me some of the angles you explored the doom relationship from?
These are songs. I always write songs about relationships.
Right.
And, you know, more often than not, relationships end sooner than we'd like them to. It's just the nature of life. And we, you know, our nomadic Western culture that we live in. You know, we leave people behind. We get left behind. We want to get close to people that we end up not getting close to. And the funny thing is, with this record, in my travels and my experiences, when I started to see all of these very simple stories mirrored so specifically in the lives of my friends, I think for the first time I was more aware that I'm not alone in this. You know, where a lot of times I sort of write from an individual, sort of a singular perspective, these are pretty universal stories and universal songs. So, yeah, and I think, you know, perhaps with the prior record, Modulate in 02, some of the lyrics were sort of oblique. Some of them were very homocentric. And I think some people got lost, you know.
But you were also trying to do a different thing there. And people, we're not going to go down that road. I will just make my personal statement that people missed the boat a lot.
Yeah, it's the record will stand. It'll stand the test of time. I think people will come back to Modulate and go, "Oh, now I see what he was trying to do." And I think this is the first step of them going back to see what I was trying to do. You know, this record brings a lot of things to a head, and it's an interesting place to be right now. I'm sort of right with my life. I'm right with myself. It's a very optimistic record. When the doomed relationship thing gets mentioned, I know David Brown. It was a very grateful for a nice review in such a mainstream publication,
which is incredible in itself.
But there's more to the record than that. I mean, maybe that's, you know, we all hear what we want to hear in records. So
I'm actually intrigued by the fact that the album was released July 26th, but the pre-attention to it and an Entertainment Weekly, you know, which I get, and I now read reviews in there because there are real reviewers in what is, I mean, it's several steps above people, but still, think of this country that we live in where there's two places you get reviews. You get them in the, you know, Mojo, you know, and Uncut, and, you know, and all this, the counterculture magazines or the musicians magazines, And then you get them in Entertainment Weekly. I mean, you haven't made People or Us yet, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm hoping.
If this, no, I think it's, but I think, what does it say about our society that the people in Idaho truly can get to you when in the old days they weren't reading those publications?
Yeah. Well, I think we're in an interesting time where, you know, the mainstream culture has had to be, you know, they've had to really listen to their audiences because I think the internet chips away. You know, as we, you know, as we all get into our narrow-casted worlds, whether it's, you know, where we're getting our content from, I think the mainstream has had to recognize things on the fringe a little bit quicker.
Yeah,
there's a good story here. You know, I'm not trying to be too braggadocious, but I think that my particular story is an interesting one. There's a lot of history. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good positive energy right now. And yeah, I'm happy to get it. USA Today gave it a really nice review today, so it's sort of like, huh?
USA Today, I think it's amazing.
And before they even told me, I said, let me guess, Edna Gunderson, right? And
right.
I'm like, yeah, she's been reviewing me since 1986, of course.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of the alternative journalists, as they age, want to make some money now.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to pubs where they actually can have a massive audience and affect a much more consumer audience than just music lovers.
Well, and it's, you know, it's the way life is. You know, I've lived in Washington, D.C. for 3 years, and I see it with, you know, I see how politics works. And life is like that. It's, you know, I've been friends with these people for many years. Now they're in a position of influence, and they still enjoy what I do. So I'm grateful. You know, that's how life goes. You know, nobody said it was fair. It's just, it's true.
How did you get to Yep Rock? Because they're one of my favorite indie labels because they have such, the Flesh Tones are over here, and you know, and then there's a, you know, Louisiana, you know, J.J. Adcock who's on there, you know. So it's it's one of the more interesting, and not to mention where they're located, it's a very interesting label to be on.
They had been contacting me for a couple of years, and I kept putting them off, mainly because I didn't think I had the record finished, and I don't like getting involved with new record companies until I have something sort of ready to hand to them.
Otherwise, they're going to give you input.
Exactly.
Could you do you know what we need? We need an album that Bob Mould from 1972, could you...
Yeah, exactly. That's
your clothes doesn't end up matching at all.
Yeah, people get like that. So it was. I sort of kept them at arm's length until I knew that there was a record ready to go, and they heard it and just said, "We want to do something." You know, it's a modest deal. It's you know, they have very strong distribution. Red Eye is their distribution company, and that's important these days.
Internationally, it's good stuff.
Yeah, retail is difficult right now. So they assured me that this record would be the priority for the year, and so far they've lived up to all the things they suggested, and it's all rolled out really well. I mean, a good bunch of people there, and I think everybody's getting along so far.
So let's get into the album just a little bit and do a little schematic of some of the songs. And
sure.
And purposely, again, having read all the reviews, what am I going to ask you about with Shine Your Light?
You're going to ask me about the auto-tune on the voice.
What a surprise. And I'm not sucking up, but I liked it. And, you know, even when Peter Frampton used it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
It's been around for
a long
time.
Around for a long time. And it's, again, why people choose to center on things. I just kind of heard and said, you know, he thought, you know, this is something I want to express in this song. And maybe I want it to be nostalgic, or maybe I just want it to be a little spacey. And this was the screwdriver that fit the particular device.
Well, I'll explain what that is. It's I'm doing a lot of, I do almost all my recording in the computer now. And there's a company called Antares that makes a device called Auto-Tune. And what Auto-Tune does is it analyzes an audio track and tries to correct wavering notes. The vocal on this song was done one morning when I woke up, and my voice was not in singing shape at all, but spiritually it had the exact feel I wanted. I was just improvising everything that you hear there. So I sit and I go, this is it. So I sing it 8, 10, 12 more times, and I'm listening through, and I'm trying to cut and paste to make something presentable out of it. And I'm like, you know, the first time I did this is really the way it should be. So I just need to correct this vocal. So I'm correcting the vocal, and I'm adjusting the parameters, and I, you know, decide to correct the voice very gently at the front, and then as the song goes on, I get more severe with the correction, so that it becomes more aggravated and stuttered and noticeable. And you know, people are like, oh, he's into the Cher thing. I'm just like, well, listen, you know, this is what I do with my stuff. It's my music.
So it's called Playtime at the Zoo.
It's you know, part of it's, you know, necessity, and part of it's, you know, this is what you get for making records your whole life. You can do what you want.
There you go. But then there's High Fidelity with mm-hmm. a church organ and wedding chimes. Now, yep. a statement here. If only today's guitar bands kind of saw rock and roll as an opportunity to put atypical instruments into the mix. Mm-hmm. You know, those Beatles and those Kinks and those
yep.
guys.
Yep.
We're not afraid to try different things. Mm-hmm. And yet guitar bands today, if they do mm-hmm. dare to put in a church organ, it's because, you know, Chris, my producer of the moment that I make fun of, because every CD I get from sounds the same, so I can't get any trouble. But Chris Lord Algie, as I call him, you know, every single record that comes in, you know, the meter stays at a certain place, and he, you know, mm-hmm. he'll say, you know, you need a choir in there. And that's the brilliance of the production.
Mm-hmm.
Not why you do that.
I mean, it's a contemporary wedding song. And when you go to a wedding, what are the two things you hear? Somebody playing an organ and wedding bells.
What a surprise.
What a surprise.
Oh, come on, make it more complicated.
No, it's pretty literal.
But then you end the album with Beating Heart, The Prize, which I think I could hear that on 1974 Progressive Radio.
It's a big track. Well, I always get the Peter Gabriel rap for some reason. People are like, oh, you sound like Peter Gabriel or something. I'm like, huh?
Peter Gabriel.
You know?
Isn't it great to compare things? Let's just pick the Archies. You know, it's like...
There's a lot of the Archies in that song.
Yeah. I mean, well, it might as well be.
It's a good album closer. That was a pretty new... That was a fairly new song that was written right towards the end of the whole process. And it's just, you know, it's a pretty typical Bob track. The ins and outs of it are a little unorthodox. The manipulation of the that's like the entire track without vocals being time compressed and manipulated. It's, you know, it's a, something to do. Something sounded good the morning I did it. You know, it's
so the Bob Log, which I love some of the stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the research, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll just read you the end, and you'll know exactly what you were talking about. Which was, do you remember old fashioned photo albums? You're telling a story that progresses and goes places along the way.
Yeah,
you've made. And we said this a little earlier, but you've made an album.
I tried.
And a majority of the records that I hear these days are, you know, let's find the single, figure out where to place it on the album mm-hmm. to get people to listen to the stuff around it. And I'm not saying that it's filler, but most of the current guitar bands and, you know, and bands mm-hmm. of the moment, it's about, can we get the single in heavy rotation?
Yeah.
And then what do we do from there? But, you know... Again, a lot of the stuff that you did, you know, with your bands in the past, they could have been, quote, you know, again, back to the song that I played by Husker Du.
Mm-hmm.
That felt to me like that could have been, you know, a number one hit. It might as well have been because it's you know, it's melodic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be a little louder than some of the, you know, the more, you know, the pop things. Mm-hmm. But you made an album,
yep.
and there aren't very many left. So what is it that we have we've always had a single society. Top 40 radio has always existed.
Yep. Yeah.
There's always been filler, but something's happened.
Well, we're in an immediate culture. We're in a situation where people don't have a lot of time. They don't have a lot of patience. They need to have that option to push one button, and that's all they get. You know, when CDs came around, that's when people started forgetting what song titles were.
Mm-hmm.
It just got to be about, oh, track four.
But that's very true, because and that'll happen time and time again. You'll see we're going to do something at the end of this interview that's a little thing to mm-hmm. fill out the hour that we're going to do. And people do that a lot. They'll say, well, I want that out track. I don't remember the name of the song, but track
I do it
three
myself.
On the. Yeah, we all do.
Yeah. And so we've got, so that's where we got taken out of, you know, having chapter titles, so to speak, or song titles. We sort of lost that art. You know, it's the ring, and we're in a ringtone culture. You know, that's what it really
are there,
is.
Are there ringtones on this yet? Can I have
no,
a ringtone?
I want ringtones. They should be just people are writing jingles now. You know, people are desperate. If they can get 20 seconds of a song put somewhere, they have to put everything they have into that 20 seconds because the listener doesn't have patience.
And you know what I get, and I'm sure you've seen them, what I get sometimes from the bigger labels that shall go nameless is I get the song, the single, and then I get the refrain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cut with the 20 seconds of the refrain.
Yeah.
So should I choose to say, I'll be playing the new Blink 182 track, boom, coming up, I can hit the refrain.
So you can just bumper the refrain.
Yeah, I mean,
screw the
intro or the real guitar playing or the riff in the middle, but the refrain.
Yeah, it's the pre-story. It's sort of like we're going to commercial. It's like when you...
It's like television news. Coming up next, people die.
Well, we used to do this thing in pro wrestling. It was the walking. People walking. what it would be is like we'd be, you know, right in pro wrestling, the next segment would be so-and-so would fight so-and-so, and you show so one of the guys walking at the camera as if the camera's not there, and you see him coming towards the, not out into the arena, but in, behind the arena walking. And then I started seeing politicians doing it, like in the 2000 election, they'd show Gore walking. You know, and it was like, you're building this drama. You're giving like pre-story.
So I'm going to skip two questions ahead because the segues are always great. But do you think rock and roll is a bit like professional wrestling, and that's why you kind of went into that for a while?
They borrow from each other. I think they're both informed by the spectacle. You know, I think they're a little bit different. I mean, rock and roll is more like religion, and I think, you know, wrestling is a little more like Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a different kind of storytelling. They're very similar. There's a lot of bombast. There's a lot of, you know, testosterone and the whole, you know, crazy behavior and, you know, the physicality of it. It's comparable, I think.
So I think, I'm going to now segue wrestling to songwriting. I think it was Marshall Crenshaw who sat exactly where you were sitting and absolutely talked about and lamented about the loss of the craft of real songwriting. Mm-hmm. And it's not about the style, but it's about the song.
Mm-hmm.
And these are songs.
Yep.
You set out to write songs. You didn't say, well, you know, I kind of want High Fidelity to sound like the Beatles, and I kind of want Paralyzed to sound like the, you know, like whomever, and, you know, and pull a Zeppelin riff. And now, is it simply because, and I'm not saying this in any way, because you've been a member of it, you know, you're considered an icon, and when I tell people, oh, by the way, I'm interviewing Bob Mulder, the first thing I say is, no, really, he's doing, you know. You know, and you and I are sitting here having a conversation because that's what we both do, but... You know, do you think that's why you don't even have to go that way?
I don't think about it. That's not why I write music. I write music because I need things to listen to at home. You know, I think the diversity on this record is just, I think that can be attributed to the amount of time that I spent collating and writing all this stuff. High Fidelity is 10 years old. Circles is 5 years old. I mean, these were songs that were meant to be put in, you know, made available along the way, you know, but for one reason or another, these, you know, a handful of them I've held off until now. 8 of the 12 songs were written very quickly this year, you know, just when I hit a groove. But stylistically, I don't worry about it, you know. The song tells itself. The song tells the story. To sit down and go, I need this, you know. No, you need to have an opener, a closer. Song 3 should be really good. And then the rest of it, you just try to make it flow naturally.
I like the song 3 part, right? Because if song 2 kind of, people are like, I don't know about, they immediately skip to song, especially in our CD society. Yep. And it's what I do when I scan a record too, because song 2 usually is a little challenging, or one would hope it is.
Yeah.
But song 3, you're like, okay, good, I'm going to go through the rest of this because it's now got me hooked.
And that's a 60s thing. Heavily. That hasn't changed.
Listen to any Beatles album.
That hasn't changed for me since the beginning of time.
Tell me a little bit about the remixes you're working on. I know you did an Interpol track, so you've really been getting into you've always been into the technical part, but how much fun is it to do that? Because of course most remixes, you know, are either a repetition of the rhythm, a sampling of the vocal, you know, kind of what was done in the disco remix days.
Yeah.
So the first thing about a remix is, can it improve the track or bring out something new in the track?
Yeah, I think it can. It's a whole fresh take on a song. The Interpol mix, we kept the song pretty true to form as far as structure. You know, we extended a few parts, but we replaced almost all of the instrumentation and drums, and we kept the vocal, we kept the bass, we cut up guitars. Sam had brought a whole bunch of new drum loops in that he recorded in their rehearsal space. I did a lot of programming. We messed that thing around pretty good, and it's a whole different song. I just did a low remix of a song called Monkey off their new album, The Great Destroyer.
And low is great.
Yeah, well, the first track, I you know, moved...
Actually, Great Destroyer is the track that I played, so I can't wait to hear that remix.
Yeah, Monkey it moved, you know, I moved the tempo up, gave it a very dark house feel. It's sort of like a, you know, New York, sort of almost tribal New York kind of thing.
That's a great track.
It is a great song. Did that, I did a VHS or Beta remix a couple years ago.
We had them on how many months ago? Yeah, back in March at South by Southwest, we interviewed them, and then we had them on a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Great band.
Yeah, they're a very, very good band. So,
is that the remix that's out that I just played?
Solid Gold.
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you are.
They should be putting, you see, it should say Bob Mold remixes.
It probably does somewhere on there, but not big enough letters.
No, but that's what I'm saying. They got to get this, they got to get the, you know, it's like the marquee. They've got to get this right.
Yeah.
Because at this, well, but truly, when you remix, as many people have figured out, when you remix a band, you become the artist.
Sort of, yeah.
I mean, to a great extent.
You're definitely the producer, and you're reinterpreting the track. Yeah, it's a fun thing to do, and you know, if it's people that I like and you know they're into it, I'll give it a shot. You know, it's a good thing. I do a lot of remixing on my own stuff, and I enjoy it quite a bit. I spent most of 2003 learning how to do that. You know, just doing a lot of bootleg, like white label type remixes.
Okay, this is the joke thing I do, and yeah. I wasn't going to do it with you, but then I looked it up and I said I have to do it. Mm-hmm. So allmusic.com is where America goes when they don't know a thing about an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to this particular site?
I don't know if I have.
Oh, good. Then it's even more fun. They divide you up. So here you are, you know, and they pick the appropriate, you know, and they pretty much, but the thing about it, what is scary, and I will not let you near your bio, but this tends to get picked up. If you go to Rolling Stone or VH1 or any of them, they pick up they've got the contract, they pick up the allmusic.com bio.
Oh, great.
But it gets better. But they divide you up into genre, styles, and moods.
Oh, cool.
Would you like to hear?
Sure, why not?
Your genre is rock.
Yep.
Your styles are American, underground, singer-songwriter, alternative pop, rock, indie rock, and college rock.
That's cool. That's seven.
But here's your moods. So which one of these do you want to own for the rest of this interview? Ready? Reflective, bittersweet, brooding, bitter, angst-ridden, cathartic, rousing, fiery, gloomy, tense, anxious, cerebral, and earnest.
I'll take earnest.
but this is, again, here we go.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know, they're distilling.
What's the new Bob Mold album like? Oh, well, you know, it's kind of rousing, but in some, like Cut 3, it's kind of cathartic, but you know, his tense anxiousness just...
It makes it so easy for people.
Doesn't
just
it
grab
though?
One from each category.
The homogenization of music, it's you know, it's what it should be.
Well, people have to have reference points, but that is pretty funny, I got to say.
So as you're going, you know, into the rest of your day, you know who you have to be. Mm-hmm. These are your moods.
Yeah, it usually doesn't get me a better seat on the next flight. Being cathartic.
Cathartic
doesn't work at the airport.
Rousing doesn't. I've found that rousing doesn't work very well. I tend to be rousing, and it just doesn't do much for me.
No, rousing. Kind
of, in fact, they sit you in the back of the plane right next to the potty, and that's the end of that.
Yep, that's it.
So the last thing that we like to do, which is really kind of joyful, and I know it's so funny because this is like the trademark of the show, and you of all people, this is going to be like, you're just going to go down a set list for me.
Right.
We like to do a thing called a musical sandwich, and this is my way. I don't have to ask you about influences, obviously, but this is my way of introducing people to two tracks off the album as the bread.
Uh-huh.
But then putting anything you've always wanted to put in between, I will play it and segue it live exactly as you ask me to.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to give me two tracks off of this and then pick a bunch of tunes in between, that's how we fill out the rest of our hour that we do here.
So you want the two bread songs.
Two bread songs.
Now, are the sort of the...
Are two of yours. And you can do a club. If you have the urge to put one in the middle as a club sandwich... And then just give me some, whatever you've always wanted to kind of hear with a couple of these tunes that you haven't done yourself or you have and you want other people to know because they haven't come to the club in Washington. And just hit me with a bunch of tunes by anybody you've always kind of wanted to. And again, since you DJ so much, this will probably be a walk in the park.
Well,
for a lot of people, it's not so easy.
Well, let's start with Circles and let's end with Paralyzed and In Between. Oh, what would I throw? Let's go with something like Music is Math by Boards of Canada. Let's go with something from Imogene Heap, from Frou Frou. You know, whatever. You can pick any mid-tempo song of hers and put it in there. What else? Oh, M.I.A. by the Foo Fighters. That would be something.
There you go. Dear Dave Grohl.
That would be, yes. Where's my...
exactly. Good for you.
Where's my car?
Good for you.
No, he's a good guy. I like Dave. What else would I put in there? Oh, Don't Save Us from the Flames by M83 would be a nice one. Oh, what else would be good? There's a group called Copeland. What is the name of that song? They're going to open a bunch of shows. That song, No One Really Wins. I still like Understanding the New Violence by, This is the New Violence by Uncut, group from Toronto. I would put, what is the name of that song? Open Your Eyes by United State of Electronica.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.